Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. This week, we're bringing a review of Season 7 of Drive to Survive to its conclusion by reviewing Episodes 9 and 10 and reflecting on the season as a whole. In Episode 9, titled Under New Management, Netflix turns the spotlight on the fight for P6 in the Constructors' Championship and the two teams that are eyeing it with dreams of extra millions in sight, Haas and Alpine. The title refers to the change in management structure to both teams, with Haas parting ways with the team principal that led it from the beginning, Gunter Steiner, and promoting Ayo Komatsu in his place, who brings a very different background, personality, and dynamic to the team that finished 2023 in last place. Alpine is again doing the Russian roulette with its team principal and bringing in one of the most interesting and controversial personalities to advise it. Ina, your personal favorite, Flavio Briatore.
In terms of personality, Gunter Steiner is greatly missed. Ayo Komatsu seems very cerebral, analytical, and serious, the complete antithesis to how Gunther has been presented in Drive to Survive. Since Gunther shows up at the beginning of the episode making fun of hearing about his firing in the middle of a grocery store, the contrast in styles and personality could not be clearer. Komatsu is very focused on achieving the best results with Haas possible and talks about all of the improvements that have been made to the car and the environment, where people want to work without providing any specifics. With the details missing, we can only guess that Komatsu's more technical know-how and approach is key to turning Haas around. Alpine, on the other hand, is in complete disarray. As shown very clearly in Season 6 of Drive to Survive, they drivers do not get along, and the car development is stagnating. Thus, when the tracks do not suit the car, both drivers finish at the back of the grid. When there is a glimmer of hope for points, they tend to collide. It is very clear that Flavio Briatore is not an Esteban Ocon Biggins fan, calling him a spoiled brat and disliking the fact that he tends to blame the car when the results do not materialize. And as an aside, they all blame the car. It is not a surprise when Ocon announces that he's switching teams, and his preferred option is Haas. Ocon claims that it is Ayo Komatsu that is the main draw, and when questioned at Haas factory after Ocon's announcement whether he's the right fit for Haas, Komatsu is clear that it is Ocon's work ethic that is the main reason for why he is the best choice. Flavio Briatore does not take the news well and claims that Ocon now has no motivation to show great results, a comment that will not age well in this episode.
That comment, not aging well, brought me so much joy rewatching it. With the driver changes, both teams announce new blood for 2025. Although it goes unmentioned in this episode, with Haas's current drivers moving on in 2025, Nico Hülkenberg to Sauber and Kevin Magnussen out of F1, Haas chooses Ollie Bearman to complete their lineup in 2025. Esteban Ocon's departure from Alpine leaves a seat next to Pierre Gasly unoccupied. As we remember from episode 4 of season 7, at one time they had hopes that Carlos Sainz may join, but since he announced his signing with Williams, the seat remains open. Enter Jack Doohan. Flavio Briatore is in his full villain edit when he seems to terrorize Jack in making sure that he is mentally strong, fully committed to the job, and utters an iconic phrase, "I control you every millimeter." Sorry, that is not my best Flavio accent. If you can't tell, I have a cold. So that's the best we're going to get today. Jack looks appropriately thrilled when it is announced that he will be the Alpine driver. As he has said, it's better than being reserve, but you can see the look of terror in his eyes as well.
Yes, you can. And the saga continues in 2025. The rivalry between the two teams comes to a head in this episode, first in Austin and then in Brazil. Although Claire Williams describes the Austin race as one of the best races of the championship, I am not sure conventional wisdom holds it as high of a regard as Claire, although it was memorable to me for the reasons that Netflix does not show. In any case, Haas performs extremely well, with Nico Hülkenberg managing to score points in P8, with Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon finishing outside the points despite Gasly's great qualifying. He started in P6, which was the highest qualifying position of the year. Haas seems fully in control of P6 in World Constructors Championship, and Alpine does not seem to have a way to fight back from P9. But then Brazil comes calling. Brazil, which I argue was one of the best races in 2024, and just in general, usually delivers a very good race, is an incredibly wet race. And Netflix focuses on the daunting task by highlighting team radios that convey the absolute brutal conditions. Haas is on the back foot from the start, with Kevin Magnussen suffering from food poisoning. So Ollie Bearman, who is still competing in F2, stepping in for him, and both him and Nico Hülkenberg qualifying towards the end of the grid. Bearman's radio message conveys at first that he is unable to see his mirrors, and then his gloves, which is on his steering wheel, so basically he can't see the wheel. His messages get more and more desperate as the team keeps insisting that he continue to stay out, with his engineer praising him for doing a good job and him responding that he's just trying not to die. Ultimately, he crashes into a wall after being asked to nurse his tires. The stern dressing down that Bearman gets from Komatsu comes as a little harsh, considering it is only his third race in F1, although the first two are not shown or acknowledged. And Komatsu ultimately presents it more as a lesson. That's something he should not be getting depressed about, which I thought was a little flippant response. And I think what would help Bearman not to get depressed about if Komatsu was a little bit more humane about how he delivered the lesson.
I agree. I thought he could have phrased that a lot better than he did, and I hope his management style is quite different than that. And that was just a one-off. But we have Alpine, on the other hand, experience a complete reversal of fortune with Ocon ending up qualifying in P4, which is not shown in Drive to Survive, and Gasly in P13. Ultimately, by staying out when the front runners pit, Ocon ends up leading the race with Gasly making up 10 spots in P3. Even though Ocon cannot hold on to the lead and Max Verstappen overtakes him, more on that in the next episode, the Alpine duo end up on the podium scoring 33 points in one race and catapulting Alpine from P9 to P6. Despite such a storybook reversal of fortunes, Flavio Briatore continues to feel disdain for Ocon, exasperated by Ocon having a miscommunication with the team during the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which caused him to go into the pits when the team was not ready to change his tires, as well as his collision with Franco Colapinto and a Williams on the first lap in the next race in Qatar. Briatore pulls the plug and substitutes Ocon with Doohan for the last race of the season. Even though Ocon will remain in F1 in 2025, the abrupt ending to his relationship with Alpine is in stark contrast with other relationships in the next episode. I thought that was disappointing when it happened, and it was even worse seeing it again. What do you
Oh,
think?
absolutely. And if we can go into and what they did not show, one
Oh,
of the
yeah,
things
there
they
was
did,
quite a bit.
yeah, but to continue on the Ocon. So what was interesting is they did show a little bit of the celebrations after the Brazil result. And they even included Gasly saying that he respects Ocon as a driver and just they still have personal issues. But it was so amazing to see how much they hugged each other. They were smiling. They were doing interviews together. The cool down room was the most joyous, considering that Max Verstappen, it has always been believed, had a beef with Esteban Ocon. If you go back to 2018 and the shoving incident,
Oh,
also
yeah,
in
that's right.
Brazil. So you would think like it wouldn't be as warm and happy as it ended up being. So the whole thing was so surreal because then Gatley completely reverts to form when Okan leaves. Because as I remember, he just, I think his goodbye message was just an emoji or just chow or something very flippant.
It was. Are we going to talk about Max Verstappen and his amazing drive?
Yes, of course, it's in episode 10.
Okay, just checking. I could. Well, I just read that. Sorry.
So yeah, so that I thought was a huge miss. Well, there were so many misses. So for instance, the fact that there was no mention that Jakdun's contract was only for 6 races, or that Flavio Briatore is his manager, which gives his treatment of Doohan like an extra dimension that is bizarre. There's a blink and you miss it reference that Ollie Oakes is actually the new team principal of Alpine. And if you thought Russian roulette would end in 2024, nope.
No, it does not.
Yes, I think one of the biggest misses was that there was no mention that Renault was getting out of the engine business. And with the engine being the main issue for why their car was not performing as well as they thought that it should have.
Right.
And Alpine will be using Mercedes engines from 2026 on. I know that was hard to fit it in, but I thought it was appropriate that it should be mentioned since Briatore went all about how Ocon keeps blaming the car. Well, if you don't put the right engine in the car, what do you expect?
That would have been a good fit for that. I think they could have made
Yes,
that work.
exactly. I mean, one like piece of gossip that I thought they could get into, but I guess again, it was hard to fit it in, is that one of the reasons why Alpine really soured on Ocon was that they clocked him having discussions with Williams because he used a car provided by Alpine to visit the Williams factory and they figured it out by following the GPS data. So it's both petty, very big brother, and also kind of unrealistic because the drivers are supposed to talk to other teams because they know they're expendable once they no longer produce the results, or even if the car is not to their level or standard, like they should be able to move around and the team should not take it personally because they change drivers without caring whether they completely destroy their prospect.
They should, but going in an Alpine-issued car probably was not his greatest idea.
It was not, but you remember, Ocon is probably comes from the poorest background on the grid. And by that, I'm not saying he comes from a poor family, just on the grid, his background is the humblest. And so maybe he doesn't have as many disposable cars, especially in UK, that he can use to go and visit a factory.
Maybe. Maybe. That's fair.
Right. Well, the biggest omission for me, which I understand was not the point of the episode, but I cared, was that they did not mention the Charles Leclerc one in Austin from P4. And by the way, it was a shocker to everyone, including him. So
I
that.
can see how that did not fit into the narrative of this episode, even though you are head of the Charles Leclerc fanboy club.
Well, wait a second. In McLaren episode, they showed him winning in Monza. They showed actually more celebration in Monza than I expected them to show because the focus was on McLaren.
How do you not celebrate Ferrari winning in Monza for the first time in?
Well, he never won in Austin before. I don't know. They could have, again, it could have been a second. They could have shown it. And then, of course, they kept ignoring Behrman substituting for Ferrari and Haas in 2024 prior to the race in Brazil. But the biggest omission for me was that they never showed that it was a red flag that allowed Ocon, Gasly, and Verstappen to pit and not lose position that kept them at the front of the grid. So that was the big gamble. They knew the conditions were so bad that eventually there would be a red flag. So their gamble was to stay out until that red flag came out, and they were right. And that's why they were at the front. And I guess maybe it wasn't that big of a deal, but I thought what they showed was a weird, from the strategy standpoint, it was a weird juxtaposition because it seemed like, oh, people just couldn't handle it. And so they went to the pits, and these three just kept on going forward. And I'm like, that's not what happened, and that's not how any of this works.
I can see why Netflix did it the way that they did, but it would have been nice if they mentioned the red flag. As a
Well, I think it's
fan
key.
of F1, it is key. If you
And just
present it in that way, like I can kind of understand why they would.
well,
do it in production that way, but it would have been nice.
Well, in the next episode, we're going to talk about a drive that goes almost as spectacular as for one of those drivers, and there was no benefit of the red flag. Now that we went over what Netflix showed and did not show, what about our superlatives for this episode,
Oh,
Aaron?
I feel like there were so many good ones, but I'm gonna give it to the most unlikely drivers to make it onto the podium. And I know we talked about it, but it really is Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly. And we usually just say for the drivers that typically do not make the podium, there is usually some extraneous circumstance that gives them that opportunity. Rain is always a big one. And Pierre and Esteban have a highly contentious relationship. And even they posted on social after the race happened. They're like, no one really understands our background because you would have thought they were the best of friends, but they were the most unlikely duo to ever end up on a podium. And this isn't even just for this episode superlative. I will give it for the entire 2024 season.
Oh, I agree. So my super, well, I have a few, and you'll be not shocked that Flavio Briatore features in quite a few of them.
I would highly expect him to.
So one of them is most hypocritical comment. I almost wanted to name it Flavio Briatore commentary because pretty much a lot of the things he says are highly hypocritical. But this one took the cake. Because he was saying that Ocon needs to take responsibility. So, this is in regards to him constantly blaming the car. And then he says that he, Flavio, always takes responsibility.
I laughed out
I just
loud
could,
when
like,
he
the
said
man
that.
who still refuses to acknowledge that he knew anything about Crashgate is, and the one who was responsible for it, whether 100%, still has never taken responsibility for it, is the
That
one who
is
actually made that comment.
a great superlative.
Yes. The other one, also from Flavio, actually, I have two, and those are from most obnoxious comment. The one I think is not as obnoxious as the other one, but I thought it was notable. So he was asked if the coffee served at Enstone, which is the headquarters of Alpine Factory in UK, is good. And he answered, no. Like, it was
Okay, I
very.
mean, I am a fan of Italian coffee. Lavazza is probably my favorite, so it's snobby, but I kind of get the snub.
Well, I have to say, UK has got come a long way for coffee. So maybe it's just that it didn't make it into the factory.
Okay, fair.
The other thing he said was about announcing that Ocon will be replaced for the last race of 2024. You need to be a democratic dictator. I don't even know what that means, but I feel like that's definitely Flavio Briatore.
For sure.
Nonsensical and exactly what you expect. But there were actually a couple of insightful comments, and they came from unusual suspects. So one is about Esteban Ocon and rain in Brazil, and he says that rain levels up the cars but does not level up the drivers, which I thought was very cool and very confusing if you think, how does it apply to Lance Stroll?
I am processing that. Because I must not have paid that much attention watching the episode, but I feel like rain levels up the car and the drivers, because there are definitely drivers that do better in the rain than others.
Right, but I think what he, but I think it is a common wisdom that, like, they always say rain is a great leveler,
Yes.
and that is because, like, you do not become, I mean, I guess if you're not confident, driving in the rain will not increase your confidence. Like, you're still gonna struggle with that. But in terms of
Correct.
skill, like, again, if the cars kind of become equivalent, then your skill will rise to the top. Although I say that and I'm very pained when thinking about Charles Leclerc in the rain, but I blame the car because Ferrari, I think, levels down.
I'm going to have to keep thinking on this one.
Okay. So another one was Christian Horner when asked about Ayo Komatsu. I mean, it is catty, but it is Christian Horner. All these vanilla engineers that talk about probabilities and data. I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. There is a trend in team principles. We've seen James Vowles, Io. You know, there is, I do understand But now that we're down Christian Horner, we have Flavio, although I did
He's not a team
see,
principal.
I know, but I did see that Christian Horner might be making his way to Cadillac.
Well, we'll see.
We can talk about that next week when we do silly season catch up. But
Yep. Okay. Well, this episode would have been a lot more exciting if Gunter Steiner were still a team principal at Haas. I feel that he would have brought a lot of personality, which would have been a good match for Flavio Briatore. As such, Flavio is the standout of the episode, albeit still maintaining his villain persona. There's not much on-track action, but the glimpses we get of the Brazil race are as exhilarating and thrilling as they were when we were watching the race itself.
Season 7, Episode 10, Endgame, closes the 2024 season and brings all of the storylines that we have been following to a close. We relive the end of the Lando Max drivers' title fight, go through McLaren versus Ferrari constructors' title fight, which is accurately presented as coming to a head in the last race. We say goodbye to Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes and Carlos Sainz and Ferrari. We say goodbye for now to Daniel Ricciardo, Valtteri Bottas, Sergio Perez, and Kevin Magnussen. We relive Brazil's winning drive, which is considered as one of the best drives of any era of Formula One.
The Lando Max title fight, which was not as close as Netflix shows it to be, was essentially over before Brazil. But Brazil put the final nail in the coffin of Lando's 2024 title dreams by showcasing why Max is considered a generational talent and producing one of the most spectacular arcs within a race that I have ever seen. It is pretty amazing that Netflix shows the qualifying for the Brazil race, but again, not explaining it in sufficient detail. It shows how horrendous the conditions were, with constant heavy rain interrupting the action, and how difficult it was to keep the car on the track. Lando Norris secured a pole with an amazing lap, while Max Verstappen was shockingly knocked out in Q1. Netflix does not differentiate again between Q1, Q2, and Q3, so it seems that Lando got pole in the same session that Max ended up in P17 due to a red flag caused by Lance Stroll spinning out. But the main point is that they are starting on the opposite end of the grid. Christian Horner, of course, has to interject that Max would have been the fastest, but there's no guarantee if he made it to a Q3. Christian also mentions that it would be a great recovery for Max to just get into the points. The start of the race was truly amazing, with cars going off and colliding as everyone was battling heavy conditions, and Max carving through the field by going from P17 to P10 by lap two. Max kept overtaking as Lando Norris kept going in the opposite direction, radioing that he was dying out there, going off the road, and ultimately finishing in P6. As Max's strategies to stay out pays off massively, although not exactly how Netflix describes it, he's finally able to overtake Ocon for the lead, as we already saw in the previous episode. His ultimate win from P17 is as thrilling as it is shown in this episode. The one time I actually agreed with Helmut Marko, who said that that was a demonstration. Finally, Will Buxton makes an astute observation, I know, shocker, that by going from P17 to P1 in almost undrivable conditions in a car that was at least third best by that point in the championship, Max did not make a single mistake.
It was exquisite to watch that live. I mean, there's no other way to describe it, but Max Verstappen officially clinched his fourth World Drivers' Championship in Las Vegas. Netflix does not show the race. Instead, they focus on Red Bull celebrations, which include Horner and Verstappen hugging and Horner telling Max how he deserved it and that he was proud of him. Will Buxton rightly points out that Max and only Max's incredible driving kept the Drivers' Championship in Red Bull's hands. There is a very nice interlude that shows the conversation between Max and Lando, where Lando jokes with Max that he is a lucky bastard, and Max reassures Lando that he will get his by saying, "I told you many times there will be a day." Despite the fractures and the friendship captured in episode 2 of season 7, it is clear that they remain friends who wish the best for each other.
The conclusion at the final race of this season in Abu Dhabi was a very dramatic setup, as Claire Williams reminds us that the winner of Constructors' Championships gets $130 million. And it has come down to McLaren versus Ferrari. There is also continued emphasis on Alpine versus Haas, but it definitely gets the second billing. The on-track action is as spectacular as it was in real life, with Charles Leclerc going from P19 to P8 after the first lap, more positions gained in a single lap than Max in Brazil, and ultimately ending up in P3, gaining the same number of positions as Max in Brazil. Max, who started in P4, right behind Piastri in P2, collided with Piastri in turn one, which pins all McLaren's hope on Lando Norris holding on to P1, with now Carlos Sainz closing in P2. There is nothing Ferrari can do with displacing Norris, and he ends up coming in P1, securing McLaren's first Constructors' Championship since 1998, as Will Buxton points out, before Lando or Oscar were even born. Netflix builds tension by showcasing Lando's breathing on the radio as he's closing in on his last lap, showing the exhaustion, the strain, and the effort it takes to not make a mistake with the team's title hopes on the line. The celebration afterwards are joyous and endearing, with Zak Brown kissing Fred Vasseur on the forehead, Horner congratulating Zak and other members of the McLaren personnel who are seen hugging their Ferrari counterparts, and Lando Norris' mom telling him that he made so many people happy. This is one of the most satisfying ending to a season as shown via Netflix, even though in real life I was rooting for Ferrari.
Netflix also does not shortchange Lewis Hamilton's last drive for Mercedes. Lewis overtakes Russell on the last lap after Toto Wolff radios Russell to keep it super clean with Lewis. Bono has the final "It's hammer time" moment, and Lewis is allowed to do donuts after the race. Lewis's final official radio is very emotional, with him crying and Toto saying that he always will be part of the family. The episode ends with Toto recording a very personal and emotional voice note for Lewis Hamilton, telling that every dream needs a team and he needs to always find his people. And I will say, whoever the man was saying no when Toto said, "Did it make you cry?" lied. I cried.
I know, and I do you think it was influenced a little bit of Lewis's current struggles at Ferrari?
No, I cried last year at the end when it was live in the season, when him leaving Mercedes, because to have so much time with one team and to have accomplished everything that they did, that's just so rare and special and monumental. So it was like the end of an era. And it was hard to watch that one end, and it was exciting to see him go to Ferrari. I would have cried even if he was doing spectacular at Ferrari.
Okay, fair enough.
What did Netflix miss in this one, Nina?
I'm not going to mention again that there was the red flag that helped Max in Brazil, but I just want to mention I don't think there was an equivalent red flag that helped Charles Leclerc. And again, he made up the same number of spaces, just started lower.
And with no rain.
There's no rain. Well, duh. Otherwise, I think Ferrari would not be even close. So there's also no mention that Brazil's qualifying had to be postponed a day and happened just hours before the race. It took hours to complete because the conditions and the red flags just kept changing. And there were so many crashes, which included Alex Albon's car being unable to be fixed in time for the race. Speaking of Max's spectacular drive in Brazil, he actually did 20 fastest laps. And at that time, it was saying like he was sending everyone a message that I'm so far ahead of you. It's not even funny. I'm surprised Netflix did not show George Russell winning Las Vegas, but again, they totally left Las Vegas on the cutting room floor. One of the interesting outcomes from Brazil was Lando Norris saying that it was luck that caused Max to win in Brazil. And there was a fallout that continued way after the season to the point where they do FIA awards. And when Lando got an award, I think it was for the constructors, he actually joked that now he understands it's more than luck. And he said something that was kind of stupid at the time. But I think the biggest omission, I hope you agree with me, is that they didn't show Qatar at all, or what happened between George Russell and Max Verstappen in Qatar.
I know that
Now,
was very disappointing that they did not get into that at all.
I mean, I understand if they weren't at the race, but I think it was worth showing because that beef continues into
Oh, yeah.
2025. And it was such a petty, like very George Russell kind of a thing where there was an incident during qualifying. George was not on a hot lap. They were summoned to the stewards. Apparently, George told Max, "Don't worry, like it's nothing." And then in the steward's office, he completely turned around. And of course, Max blew up. Happened outside of the steward's office, so they wouldn't be able to give him more than one grid penalty for what George said happened. Of course, Max won the race, so I think ultimately he had the final word. But apparently, like, there were a lot of words in the media that were really rough, excluding Max saying he lost all respect for George Russell, George Russell saying that Max is a bully and he lashes out when he's angry. Again, storyline to be continued in 2025. And all of this actually resulted in a dinner in
Oh,
Abu
the
Dhabi,
driver's dinner is my
the driver's dinner.
favorite.
Yes, where the driver specifically left place next to Max empty so that George would take it, and George took the chair and moved it to the end of the table. So this is not over. It's constantly being referenced. And I thought it was a big miss for Netflix, unless, again, they're cooking for next season because the saga continues.
They might bring it up, but again, lots of great superlatives coming out of this episode. You and I actually share one with the funniest exchange with George Russell and the fan, where the fan thought, "Oh, hey, Lando." No, I'm George Russell. Clearly, you're not a big, clearly a huge fan of F1.
Well, that's the thing. He didn't send it to the guy. He sent it to his entourage.
I
And
know.
I thought that was, well, what do you think? Like, I thought it was a little, like, too condescending.
Well, I mean, that's one of my issues with George, but I also think he was playing to the Netflix cameras because he knew the boom was over his head and was trying to
Fair.
get more coverage because he doesn't get a lot of FaceTime typically, unless it's, in dramatic fashion, like him passing out in Singapore or, making snarky comments. But I don't know. I'm going to give it to best goodbye from a team to a driver, and it's Hamilton leaving Mercedes.
That's fair. Although I have to say, they didn't show it, but I would say Carlos Sainz and Ferrari matches it because if you remember,
All the tears in the video, they did show it in the episode. Like they
they
made him a
did, but that's not what I
video.
meant.
Oh,
They
okay.
actually arranged for him and his father to share a racetrack, and then they
Oh.
gifted him with a Ferrari.
Oh, I knew they
And
gifted him a Ferrari, but I didn't realize about him and his dad. That's sweet.
yes, and the funny thing is, even though it was past, during the break from the season, Leclerc actually went to that event to say goodbye. So I
Oh,
thought
that's
that
sweet.
was up there with the best goodbye.
It is. I'm just giving it to Mercedes because Lewis Hamilton's my favorite.
You don't have to explain it. That works. Well, for me, there was also what I call the best exchange, and it was when Zha Guanyu, who we didn't mention but also is off the grid, but they don't barely show him. So Zha Guanyu was shocked that Max Verstappen was starting in front of him in Brazil because he was never used to seeing Max that low. And Lando Norris whispers, "Take him out." And then Alex Albon adds fire to the exchange, saying, "Be a hero. There's more to being a hero than being a zero." And then Lando responds, "Good or bad, they'll remember you."
Oh, that was so good.
It
Now,
was
I know
perfect.
that was Max's greatest drive ever, and I'm glad we got to see the drive. But if Guan Yu actually took him out, I mean, that would be comical at the same time.
With regards to Abu Dhabi, was what I call the most prophetic comment. And that was Juan Pablo Montoya was talking, who's a former F1 driver, was talking to Zak Brown, and he says, "The only wild card is Max, if Max wants to do something stupid." And Zak answers, "Just don't take us out." And of course, Max does something stupid and does take Oscar out. I mean, not completely, but from the top. So I thought that was super prophetic. And finally, Flavio Briatore is back with the most hypocritical comment. I'm telling you, it's like its own category.
There are so many things that you say that I just keep replaying Eminem songs in my head.
Well, so this is what Flowery Oratory said about Jack Dylan, and that's that he called him quality, which takes
That
a
didn't
whole new
age well
meaning.
either.
No, but it takes a whole new meaning. Like how Flowery Oratory probably feels about Jack Dylan is like the opposite of that. I'm not going to judge whether Jack Dylan is actually quality, but definitely not how Briatore poses it.
No, definitely not.
So I think we can go down a little rabbit hole because I thought it was interesting. Every episode of Drive to Survive includes a snippet where it shows a car pitting, and it kind of serves as the credits to the episodes. The type of car changes based on the episode, and I keep track of which cars are being showcased. This season, there was one outlier. All of the episodes, except one, featured a car that has some relevance to the episode, although sometimes it was very tenuous relevance. For example, in episode four, which is called Carlos Signs, and that's about Carlos signing with different teams, the car was a Sauber, which was one of the teams vying for his services for 2025, so that made sense. In episode 10, the car was Gasly's Alpine, which was not the main focus of the episode, but still relevant. Aaron, do you want to guess which car was featured in episode six, Wheels of Fortune, which we discussed in our last episode, and which put a spotlight on McLaren and Lando versus Oscar battle? I'll give you a hint. It was not a McLaren or a Ferrari or even a Red Bull.
I am not surprised you pay attention to these. I wish I did.
But that's what makes it fun. Like,
I know,
which
it
car do
does.
you think makes the least relevance to this episode?
All right, so it was Alpine.
You know, that probably would make more sense. But amazingly, it was Aston Martin of Lance Stroll.
Yeah,
For the
that made
life of me,
no
I could not
sense.
figure out how it made any. Like, even Lance Stroll's Aston Martin would make more sense for episode 10 than it would for episode 6.
But that doesn't make sense. The only reason I said Alpine was because that's where Piastri was and then went to McLaren. It
Right,
was all
as I
about
said.
Zak Brown playing Wheel of Fortune, the whole
No.
McLaren thing.
Yeah.
Aston Martin makes zero sense to me.
So I don't know what to make of it because I'm thinking, like, okay, are the credits made first and then they kind of shoehorned in whatever episode makes sense? So they assumed there would be something with Aston Martin that would be relevant and just never happened. So they just stuck it. Or is somebody making credits not understanding anything about cars? Because I just thought it was like, I was so, like, that was, I think, the episode that made me think, oh, I thought, like, it made, like, for instance, you know, the episode five, which was all about Charles Leclerc, it had his car makes perfect sense.
Right.
And then the first episode of the season had Max's car, makes sense because they talk get went into Red Bull scandal. So everything made kind of sense. This one was a complete outlier, and I just thought it was interesting.
I'm gonna guess it is either Netflix dropping some sort of Easter egg that we don't really know, an inside joke, or an editing error. And I'm going to say editing error is probably the most likely.
Okay. Well, we'll see if something, if it was an Easter egg, we'll hopefully hear it soon. Season seven as a whole was an entertaining season of Drive to Survive, but it was not one of its best, even though it featured a very exciting season of Formula One. As we mentioned previously, a fan that immerses himself or herself into the Grand Prix weekend will find a lot of details shown exactly as they happened, with a lot of context and other details missing. Nevertheless, Netflix production values are spectacular. So showcasing boring or well-known races does not preclude an episode from being exciting. I may be biased, but episode five, Le Cours de Leclerc, is the best episode of the season, and it did not include a lot of new material, but presented everything in a very cinematic way. Netflix tried something different with episode seven, In the Heat of the Night, by giving the drivers a chance to document their weekend, but it did not produce the desired results, partially due to the track chosen for this treatment. I hope Netflix will continue to try different things in the future at different races that would be more conducive to providing better content. Netflix should continue to go to Brazil, as the race was one for the ages and provided Drive to Survive with enough material for two episodes. I am a little concerned that with the exit of such personalities as Daniel Ricciardo, Gunter Steiner, and even Valtteri Bottas, and with uncertainty of how much of Christian Horner will be showcased next season, Drive to Survive will not be able to replace them with personalities that have the same charisma or provide memorable quips. But we will have six rookies on the grid, and I still have hope that Drive to Survive can get them to open up before they become seasoned pros.
I have a feeling that they will. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
But also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or shout out to your favorite F1 personality. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.